All right. So after a long delay, and I don't know if people are really asking for us back, but we are back. For those that do watch our podcast, we've been away for a little bit. Probably my fault, I would say. We've just been in a busy season, had a lot of things going on at the church, and let's see. Do I have any other excuses I can use? Yeah, I did have a kid, but I think that's even been going on for a while. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, we were waiting on Espy, so no.
It's Espy's fault.
Yeah. So yeah, we're starting off on a good note. After we kind of have finished our few episodes that we did on the history of the church, last time we kind of ended. We talked about the tornado, and then we wrapped up to basically where we're at now. And so we kind of wanted to discuss different things going on in the church, different people, different ministries and such. And so obviously missions is a big one, and we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. Missions, and we're going to get into other stuff that the church does. And so, just hang with us, and we'll probably hit something you like or don't like, and it'll be great. It kind of worked out perfectly. Esperanza came all the way here from Haiti to do this podcast. It had nothing to do with her sister having a baby or anything like that. We did even talk about early on doing some sort of video conference podcast with Esperanza when she was in Haiti, but we're not that tech savvy yet, and she was already going to be here anyway, so we were like, oh, this will be perfect. Let's steal her for a night. So I'm going to go ahead and quit talking for a while, but I've got with me, and I keep saying her name, but this is Esperanza Packwood, for those who do not know.
Joseph.
It's Joseph now.
Esperanza Packwood Joseph. Anyways, moving on. And then on the other side of her is my mother, Amy Patrick. That is still your last name, right? Amy,
yes.
Patrick. Okay.
Yes.
We're going to just kind of talk a little bit about the things that Esperanza is involved in. We were just kind of arguing over when she started coming to Joplin Full Gospel with her family. What we have established is it was a long time ago, and she was it was younger than teenage years is what we know. So early 2000s, we're guessing. So this would have been the church on Michigan Street when the Packwood family started coming. And from my understanding, they were attending a church that didn't have service on Sunday nights, start coming on Sunday nights, kind of a chances story. And then once they start coming on Sunday nights, they decide to eventually switch over to the dark side start coming to church here. So Esperanza, tell us a little bit about your upbringing. You have a unique upbringing, being the daughter of a missionary, and growing up on the mission field at times, being in the States, but also going here and there and everywhere. So just kind of explain to us a little bit about your life growing up and how that was.
Yeah, my dad was Auburn Packwood. He was a missionary. He felt called into missions young, in his 20s. So he moved all of us to Mexico, even before I was born. They were doing mission work in Mexico, and so I grew up there, and it was a good experience. You know, kids, they make friends easy. So I was so young, you know, I made friends really fast when we were there. My parents went into Mexico not knowing the language, so mom and dad had to learn the language, but us kids, we didn't care. We just signed to each other and just we'd go play, and we just kind of picked up the language there, so it was much easier as a kid than going into missions as an adult. So little did I know that was preparing me for what's to come, and I had a great time. I'm so glad that we grew up there. That kind of opened our eyes to a completely different culture, and I'm just very blessed that we were able to grow up on the mission field.
So tell me, there's got to be times growing up on the mission field where you say, I'm never going to be a missionary. And then maybe times because, you know, it's like, okay, I don't want to do this. Or maybe for you, maybe it was like, I'm always going to do this. Or was this something you thought you would do for the rest of your life, or something maybe you toyed with and went back and forth on?
Well, I remember my dad, we as kids were in the living room, my dad saying, all right, which one of you guys is going to be a missionary? And we were all like, oh no, not for me. I was shy. I just didn't like to, you know, I just didn't really understand why somebody would do that, even though I grew up in it. I liked helping people, but it's hard because I didn't have to deal with those responsibilities when I was little, but, you know, growing up and becoming a missionary just was not on my heart at the time. I just, you know, you don't have those conveniences. You don't have McDonald's. You don't have all those things that kids like. So
plenty of chicken, but there's no chicken nuggets in Mexico.
No chicken nuggets.
Yeah, that's rough. So I wanted to bring Mom in on this conversation because Mom has a unique perspective, as she was kind of like our, essentially kind of followed our group, but was with the children's church for a little while, and then did youth forever with us, and so and camps and everything going on. So Mom kind of saw, you know, all of us grow up together in church, and so I know she's got some juicy stories and stuff like that, but I don't know if we'll get into those. But Mom, kind of share a little bit about, you know, because I know that, you know, at least for a long, it's been, you know, 20 plus years now that the Packwood family has been involved in Joplinville Gospel, and the, and we've, you know, helped in their mission, supported. Mm-hmm. Many of us have taken trips to Mexico mm-hmm. with Brother Packwood. So maybe you can kind of share a little bit on your side of the things.
Sure. So, Brother John, my father, met Auburn through Brother Rogers' group when, that's kind of how they got acquainted with Auburn, was through Roger Tomlinson and his ministry, and they just began, just had a good friendship, and just it really started the bond between Brother John and Brother Auburn, and then they started taking mission trips together. And that's really kind of how our church began a heart for missions, was starting there when Dad would start going with Auburn down to the mountain. And he went several times and loved it. And then Africa. And then they went, they've just been several places because now the heart was there. And it's neat for us because when they came, like Espy said, you know, they were little. She was younger. Her and Rachel were young, and the boys were maybe 12, 13, maybe, right in there. You know, they were, you know, had lived on the mission field, but yet had lived in the States for a while now. And I was doing children's church for years and then stepped out of children's church to do the worship. And then we did the youth and then camps. And so what I have some funny stories, but the whole Packard group was just, they were always a blessing. And Auburn would come and help fill in on the piano, and they would sing, and they were all musically talented, and just God would just really use their family, and we just began to love them. And then they became part of our church. And so what really, I guess, for me is the exciting part is that somebody from my youth group that was in my youth group, raised up and through camp and through our church, is now on the mission field. That's pretty cool. And she's a licensed minister with FGCI, and which I'm the secretary of, so my name is on her license. And she'll always have that. And that's just, to me, that's special because when I look at my license, I think, okay, who signed my license at this point? Who was there? And there's things like that I look at and think, okay, those were times in my life that those things meant something to me. And for us, it's really, it's exciting to see her on the mission field. We're excited to see God using her. And it makes us very proud, I would say. Very proud of her accomplishments.
Yeah. So we didn't mess up too much. No, I'm just kidding. yeah, that is cool. And to think about, you know, this is the whole idea of this podcast, even, is that to talk about things going on in Joplin Full Gospel. So the fact that, you know, we have this missions family that comes, and then Esperanza, I mean, I think she calls this church her home church, would maybe sometimes, but yeah, depends on who's asking, but that she would be raised in this church and then go out and be doing missions herself. I know mom's got some good memories, but Mom, I need you to share a little bit about your camp experience with Esperanza and some of your earliest memories, because it's just too good not to let everyone in on.
Great.
So we have, like, I've been camp director for like almost, I think it was like 17 years that we've been directing camp at Midwest Youth Camp. And I remember this so, so vaguely. I mean, it was like, I can remember this like yesterday. And this might have been your first year there. And she was young, little. And I remember, because Sister Candy was there and Cindy. And Candy comes down to us and she says, "I don't know what to do. Esperanza is in the middle of the floor and she refuses to put on a dress. She is not going to wear a dress to church." And Candy is so upset, you know, what to do? What are we going to do? Espy had a little bit of stubbornness, a little bit.
Which is strange because my dad always made us wear dresses to church.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that? Yes. I don't know. It was funny. And so that was a big kick that we were all just like, how she just, I mean, she was like this when we went up there, like, "I'm not doing it." And then to look now, I think, I can't imagine you would ever think of that. I mean, that would have been a problem, but it was funny. It was so funny. And she eventually put that dress on and went to church and never had another problem. But, and then, you know, she became a camper. They were at camp every year. All of them were at camp. And Brother Auburn and Sister Angela served at camp. You know, they just have been good camp workers and grown up in our camp, basically. And we're blessed to have them.
They had the same issue with me my first year of camp. I just wouldn't wear the dresses, but we got over it. No.
Did you?
No, it's still, no. So we've kind of hinted around at it, and we keep talking about it, but and I was even asking questions before, but it's funny because we know you're in Haiti, okay? We know that. But that's about all we know. And so, at least me, and I was thinking, you know, how long have you been there?
Around 4 years.
4 years. Mm-hmm. So, been a good while. And and I was even like, so what exactly, you know? And so, I think it's kind of cool to think about these things, because, and talk about these things, because, you know, you may hear it from the pulpit, or you know, someone may say, "Hey, we're praying for Esperanza in Haiti," and it's like, okay, she's in Haiti, and so what's she doing there? And so I just wanted to ask, first off, like, maybe give us a rundown a little bit about how you got connected in Haiti, like Chance maybe asked before, why Haiti, with like big question marks, why Haiti, and how that all came to fruition. Was that something you were looking to do? Was this kind of falling in your lap? How did this all happen?
Well, I was going back and forth working in Mexico, where I started out doing that, working with Dayspring, actually, Roger Tomlinson, which is the guy that Dad started doing missions with, which is so, I mean, crazy, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, and I really felt called there. In fact, when I would come back to the States, I just didn't feel at home anymore, which is crazy. I've lived here most of my life, mm-hmm. and I just didn't feel at home. The only time I felt like I was where I was supposed to be was when I was on the mission field. So then my uncle actually did some work with Project Hope, okay. organization called Project Hope, that work in Nicaragua and in Haiti, and they do work in Springfield as well. And he kept trying to talk me into going to Project Hope, and, "You got to go to Nicaragua. Let me connect you." So he invited me over to dinner with a lady who is a kind of the base director there in Nicaragua, and I got to know her, and I prayed about it, and you know, I was like, I'm gonna go. Like, I was a little bit scared because the only thing I ever knew was Mexico, but I decided to be obedient and go. And when I did, I started out. I was just an intern, kind of, for the first 3 months. And
What were you doing there? What was like your day-to-day stuff you were doing?
I was helping with the kids at after-school program that helped kids just help them with their schoolwork. And we have Bible classes and a music class. So I would do a music class with them, kind of just singing songs. I sang a little and play guitar, so I'd teach them some worship songs in English. And I would do an English class with the kids, and I would help feed the kids at the Center of Hope. And it came in handy because I already knew Spanish, so I just got to immediately connect with all of them. And I also, they opened up a program called Unshackled, which was a place of kind of like a refuge place for women that come out of prosecution and prostitution, sorry, and just hard backgrounds. And I taught English class for them and would do be in the Bible studies, and I would help translate as well for different groups that came in, and working with mission teams. There was a lot going on. I was very busy every day. And then the protesting happened in Nicaragua, and it just became very dangerous. I became an intern director and was over four or five girls. I was there for about 9 months. And yeah, when it started becoming dangerous, they said, I'm sorry, you guys have to go because it's too dangerous here. We could hear gunshots from our room. And so I was like, okay, I'll be back. It's fine. I wasn't even, I wasn't scared. And I went into the room to tell the girls they better pack their bags. And I was like, okay, guys, they said we had to leave. So pack your bags. And they're like, oh, we're already packed. We packed last night. We heard the shots. I was done.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just going to throw some stuff in my bag, and we'll head to the airport. And we did. And they got us out of there. In my head, I left all my stuff there. So in my head, I was like, I'll be back, you know. Little did I know my stuff would still be there. I just waited. And things weren't getting better. They were getting worse. And the president of Project Hope sat down with me, and he said, what do you think about going to Haiti? And I had been to Haiti a long time ago, a couple years before that, with my dad, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience. It was just one hard thing after another happening to us. I mean, I enjoyed it, but that was just, it was hard, very hard. So I was like thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? I just know I'm supposed to be on the mission field. So I'm going to go. And I thought in my head I was going to be there for a month, but God completely changed that. Yep. And I'm still there, and don't have no intention to going back to Nicaragua unless God calls my husband and I there. But yeah, that's how I ended up there.
Nice. So now that you're in Haiti, and you're still with Project Hope.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What does your life look like now, as far as, I guess, what you're doing, involved with them, and then maybe like, how you're, you know, ministering or what you're doing there. I guess, like, what's a day in the life or a week in the life of the things that you're having to do and working on right now?
I started out working in the clinic, which was kind of crazy because I worked as a CNA for 5 years in the States. And I was thinking, God, why was I doing that? I could have been on the mission field. Little did I know God would use what I learned being a CNA to help in this clinic, and and I would do the vitals and take their symptoms and name and age. And that's kind of how I had to learn the language, because they're like, I'm not translating for you. You're going to have to learn. So I started out in the clinic, and when they would come through, I would get to pray with them and minister to them and just help them with their physical needs.
I can't imagine taking symptoms, names, and like trying to with a language you don't know.
Well, I started off, what did she say? Write it down.
Yeah.
What did she say? So then I don't have to go home and study.
I'm just thinking, like, even in, you know, a hospital today, like, people are there because they don't feel good. And then you got to deal with somebody that can't even understand what you're saying. I'm sure that was, like, not ideal situation for either one of you.
I know
you don't feel good, but you need to tell me. And I don't know what you're saying, so that should.
Yeah.
That sounds like a
but
lot of fun.
But Haitians suffer almost. I mean, they suffer for years before they can get any medical help.
Right.
So they're okay with waiting a couple hours. That's sad. But what was the question?
I don't know.
Typical.
Yeah. What are you doing now? What are you doing now?
So I start out doing that and helping with mission teams, and we did home visits, evangelization. That's how you say it. And then after I got married and had a baby, my son, I couldn't go to the clinics anymore because I had to stay and watch him. I didn't have a babysitter, so. So I stay at home with him a lot, but I also still go out and do home visits, and we give food and laundry supplies, clothes. We just really get to know the family for about a month, a little over a month, depending on the situation, and just kind of minister to them, encourage them if they're Christians, lead them to Christ if they don't know Christ, and. So we do a lot of that. So my week is preparing for that and preparing for mission teams. And when mission teams, I'm really kind of like a hostess for the teams that come down.
And are most of the people that are coming from America, or are they coming from other places?
Yeah, it's all within the United States, all over. There's some teams from Alaska, some from Missouri, some, you know, from all over the U.S.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. So how did, Chance gave me a question from beyond, how did COVID kind of affect you guys? Was it pretty drastic, or was there a lot of things that had to change, or did you even know COVID happened? If you don't, we don't want to tell you, but there was this thing called COVID, did it play an impact in Haiti and with you guys and everything you're doing?
Somewhat. I got married and we had our honeymoon and got out of the U.S. right before the chaos happened. It was
good
a
timing.
Godsend. Yeah. I mean, whenever we were in Florida on our honeymoon, there was only 2 cases. So that was when it was just beginning. So after we got to Haiti, everything shut down in the U.S. So, yeah, it was God that everything was on time. And you didn't really see a lot of COVID there at the beginning. Now, you heard that somebody had it, they would try to kill that person because they didn't want it to spread. So if they did have it, they didn't want to say anything, and there wasn't a lot of testing being done. Sure. So it was kind of hard to know. But working in the clinics, we didn't really see anything like that.
I don't imagine you would if your life's being threatened.
Well, and, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and ride this one out from home. Like,
well, they did shut down. They did want you to wear a mask. Most people either didn't, or the mask was on their chin. They closed down the park, which is the only thing to do in town, basketball. But then they would open it up for a big concert, and then they'd close it back up afterwards.
That makes sense.
So, I mean, we didn't see a lot of cases. But just wear a mask is the main thing.
Mm-hmm. 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 So, having been in Nicaragua, having been in Haiti, Mexico, and in the U.S., I don't even know how to ask this, but like, how does the church, you know, where do you see like similarities and you're like, wow, that this is church, or are there times where you're like, wow, this is cool that, you know, this is church. And then is there like a lot of differences where you're like, wow, you know, obviously I would imagine there's cultural things that are different. And so I'm wondering if there's stuff that you've noticed just in the different places you've been able to worship, if you're like, wow, that's unique, or things that you've taken from different cultures that you appreciate or maybe don't appreciate. But mm-hmm.
What's the main religion in Haiti? Because Christianity is not, right?
It's a lot of voodoo and Catholicism. There's quite a bit of Christianity in certain areas, mm-hmm. but the main religion is probably voodoo. I don't know. Because there's a lot of people in the church that still do witchcraft, go mm-hmm. to the witch doctor when they're sick. It's just, even people that claim to be Christians are still, you know, visiting right. the witch doctor. And so there's a lot that goes on. But yeah, I would say Catholicism is pretty strong there too. But there is a lot of similarities. You know, we serve the same God. So I do go to, I believe it's Baptist, non-denominational, I don't know, it's kind of hard to tell. Some people are dancing, some people are not.
That doesn't sound like Baptist.
Well, there's not usually only one or two, or, you know. But at the church that I attend, it's called Zamiquisio, which is Christ is my friend of Christ, something like that. And it is different because they speak Creole, so that's a big difference. So that's one of the difficult things starting out, is sitting through a service that you don't understand.
And where are you at with the language? Are you?
I can have conversations with people, and some, depending on who's talking, I can understand everything they're saying. Some people, I'm not getting much, because some people talk faster, or sure. if they're from a different part of Haiti, they'll have an accent that's a little bit hard to understand. And then if you go to a different part of Haiti, sometimes they're speaking French. So it really depends. But with our staff there and my friends, I can communicate pretty well. But yeah, there's a lot of similarities in the church. They are more strict on certain things. And you know how back then they used to have the choirs and all the women mm-hmm. dressed in the same color and wore the same hat? They still do that there. There's a lot of choirs. There's a lot of women choirs, men choirs. And a lot of times they'll keep the men and women separate, but not at every church. And they'll have the kids sit in the front. They'll have a bunch of reserved seats for all the children to sit up front and all the adults in the back. So that's something that's different. You don't see that here. And they usually make the children mind, depending on which church.
You don't see
you
that
know.
Here. No.
You don't see that here too often. But yeah, there's usually no nursery, or you don't see a lot of Sunday school going on. There's a couple churches that do Sunday school, but in the town that we live in, you don't hardly see that. But I do appreciate how respectful they are in church, and there are a lot of differences in the way they do things. Some of it's like kind of the Baptist way of them reading a psalm before they stand up and read a psalm before they do worship. And some of the churches only sing hymns. Some of them are more contemporary. You know, it's kind of like here. Some churches contemporary, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're a lot more similar than people think. They just have the music up about 10 times louder than the churches here. Or 20 times louder. I don't know. You would have to bring your earplugs for sure.
Yeah, I know it. Even when we went to Mexico, it's like there's speakers piled to the top of the ceiling. Maybe a couple of them work, but they are going to be up all the way. Yeah.
They like people outside to hear.
Oh, yeah.
Hear the music and hear the preaching. So they're reaching more people that way. So
that can just be an excuse. We'll just say the reason everything's loud is just because we want everyone to hear around us.
We're sharing the gospel, right? We're sharing it with the neighborhood.
We're doing outreach, and you don't even know it. We're not even leaving the building, and we're doing outreach to people.
Yep.
So funny. Okay, that's pretty interesting that there's a lot of similarities. Do you think it's like the church you attend, is it started by? I'm just guessing, like, was it kind of, you know, missionaries came and planted, or is it more of like, this is the people of your area that have come together and this is how they do church? Or do you think they were kind of taught a structure by missionaries? Or
I think there had been a lot of missionaries come in the area I've been in that kind of, like you said, influenced the churches. But our pastor there, he goes back and forth to the States. He's Haitian, but he goes back and forth. So a lot of it is influenced by the way Americans have church.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Mom, you got any questions? Any thoughts? Concerns? So I got to ask, what's... either the hardest or most challenging things about your life on the mission field or in Haiti, things that are just really tough or difficult that maybe even people here don't even understand or know about.
You know, a lot of people come to the mission field thinking that it's all easy and you're just going to go tell people about Christ and people will want to hear it and they'll be saved and it's all fun and games, but in reality it's very difficult. Not only are you in a completely different culture, but you have to learn the language and you have to make friends after you learn the language, and sometimes it's hard, and you have a lot of spiritual attacks too on the mission field. Many times Satan lie to me and tell me you're not making a difference, and I've heard that from a lot of other missionaries too, feeling like they're not making a difference, and you have to remind yourself that this is where God's called me. I know that I'm supposed to be here, and you're so used to things here, the convenience of things as well.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm hungry, I can go through a drive-thru or I can just take something out of my fridge. Well, now you're in a place where our first apartment that my husband and I had didn't have electricity. Most places don't have water. We only had water if we paid a guy to pump it to the top of our house. It's just completely different. Living in town, it's so loud. There's goats outside, make noise all night. There's dogs outside. So you have all these changes, and it's hard sometimes to get food, and the food's completely different. And it's not only about that, but it's hard. A lot of people think, oh, that's no big deal. But when you get down there, you're having to change what you eat, your language, all your friends, not being able to see your family all the time. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And so a lot of people come saying that they're called into missions and they leave because it's just too much for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much. And I've seen that a lot. So you have to stay in your word. You have to stay in prayer because it's so easy to get discouraged and just to give up on the mission field because it's not easy like everybody thinks.
Right. Yeah, and I think we kind of have a bad, especially where we're at, we have a bad misconception where we see people go on mission trips,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's glamorous, and you get some good pictures with some good works that you're doing, but but I can't imagine, you know, you get there and you say, okay, I'm here, you know, and I'm not leaving here. And so that's a whole different animal, you know, and no water, no electricity. And yeah, I can't even imagine.
And I think it was after you left this last time that you were, we had talked over Messenger because the earthquake had come and that the cartel was really bad and that they were like stopping in the streets and you know, the gas prices and the food was really high and, you know, it was really dangerous at the time. And this is when the, was it the president? Is that what they call him?
He was assassinated.
Mm-hmm. And it just went crazy and all these things just happened and the earthquake happened and it was just really, really scary, like just not safe. And I remember all of us here praying about it. And I remember we had messaged a few times and you were telling me, you know, that gas was like almost $5 and you couldn't hardly get gas because they were stopping you, you know, and food and same things were like that. And that we don't know how blessed we are. Mm-hmm. We don't know how blessed we are. And I can't imagine living there and you being there and us knowing, but knowing that, you know, at the time Barry had to go to help the earthquake victims mm-hmm. and, you know, had got stopped and, you know, it's dangerous. It's dangerous at times, and we just don't understand that. It's you know, we just, the police aren't always the police. you know, it's not always good for us.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably something that we, you know, to think about for us is knowing that safety is a big issue. Mm-hmm. It's a big issue that you do, your life is, you know, you truly just trust God day to day.
Thankfully, the town we live in is pretty calm, just a small town. A lot of the danger is several hours away in the Port-au-Prince area. But yeah, we do have, well, that's where my husband's family lives. Mm-hmm. So we haven't been able to go visit them or anything like that. But there still is gas shortage. When I left, there was no gas at the gas station. So really, as soon as you see a line of people, you have to go park your car and wait in line for a couple hours, sometimes all day, to be able to get gas in your vehicle so you can go places. Otherwise, you're going to be walking a long, long ways. But there isn't a lot of vehicles. It's mostly motorcycles, and they do moto taxis. And sometimes you'll see 8 people on one motorcycle. And sometimes you'll see a big hog strapped to the back or 10 goats. I've seen it all.
A
big casket on the back. No joke.
Oh, my goodness.
I have, in the process of learning, almost killing myself in the...
Oh, boy.
AJ strapped on your back.
I haven't taken him outside the gate on a motorcycle.
Oh, boy. That's exciting stuff. Yeah, I'm sure that we could probably go all night about challenges and hardships and things. On the mission field, and especially where you're at. But what about, like, things that maybe looking back in the last 4 years that you can look back and call those wins or victories or like, your favorite memories or things that you can look back on? And obviously you've done a few things in your personal life in the last 4 years with getting married and having your first son. So, but is there stuff that you've seen happen or been a part of that you're excited about or remember? And
for sure. I've really enjoyed doing the home visits and seeing them be encouraged through that. But when I was working in the clinic, it was always super encouraging to us because sometimes you wonder, okay, are they just coming to get medicine and just coming for that need? Or did they really receive Christ into their heart? Or did they say a prayer so they could get medicine? You know, you always have those thoughts. But we've had people, because we try to go to this, the thing about the clinic that we do is it's a mobile clinic, so we go out into the areas where there's no hospital or you know, people that can't afford any health care. Even if they go to the hospital, they can't pay it. So working there, there had been a lot of people that had been sick for years or had been wanting to receive Christ, but they just didn't know really how to.
If you guys lead someone to the Lord, do you disciple them in some way? Do you send them to a specific church? Do you just let them receive Christ and they go on their way? Or, I mean, how do you keep that relationship going and making sure that they stay in that?
So Project Hope has the pastor training, and we go through the pastors. Like, we'll have the clinics at their church. So if they receive Christ, we connect them to that pastor and say, this person received Christ, so he's the one that's trying to, because we can't go back to all these places all the time.
So you get them connected with we connect them to the pastor. And then they take over.
Yeah. Good. And it's not always people in the church. A lot of it is people in the church that need help. But a lot of times it's the pastor that goes and chooses like 36 sick people to come in. And a lot of times it's not people that attend their church. But we'll let him know. If someone received Christ, and he'll try to stay connected with them disciple them.
Would you say overall response when you're ministering to people? Because I think with the way you guys are doing it, obviously ministering to physical needs in a way, and I think we all kind of get this, but you're ministering to physical needs to help people, but you know, like in the back of your mind, I'm doing this, but I'm also wanting to try to help you spiritually as well. So do you think people are, obviously you're going to have people reject and not want anything to do with it, but do you think overall when you're ministering to people or trying to evangelize and witness, is it overall they're pretty receptive or do you think it's, split that some aren't, or how do you feel about like you said, if you have 30 people, maybe let's just say they're 30 unsaved. How do you think the response would be when you're trying to talk to them about Jesus and the gospel?
I would say most of them are pretty receptive. The big issue in the areas that we go to is there's so much going to the witch doctor. Mm. So a lot of times if they say, I'm not ready to receive Christ, I have some debts I gotta pay. That means that they still need to pay the witch doctor for when they went and saw them. And that never ends well. They always end up more sick because the enemy wants to destroy. He's not there to heal. So we see a lot of that. I'm not ready today. Got some things I need to clear up, but I will accept him.
And when you say, just for clarity, when you say witch doctors, do you feel, obviously you're threatening their work, and what you're doing. And so do you feel like that's pretty hostile with it? Is there like a fear of like, hey, we're kind of, I think of Paul when, like the people building the idols are like, hey, we're losing business here because he's telling them about Jesus. And so I'm like thinking, is this where you guys kind of think, okay, we're kind of, we're going to make some people upset by sharing this good news. And so is there not necessarily a fear, but just an awareness that there could be, they could act out or there could be some retribution that they're wanting for this, or is that stuff you guys talk about?
People are very afraid. Haitians are very afraid because they've seen the power of Satan manifested in a lot of people's lives. So they are afraid, but one time we were doing a clinic and a witch doctor came and he was very upset because we were giving medicine and treating wounds and all those things. So yeah, he was very upset, but then he wanted treatment himself.
That makes sense.
I'm ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, he wanted to be the doctor to see him. And I have gone and we were out evangelizing and my friend's like, oh, that's the witch doctor's house. Cause I was going to the next house. I was like, great, let's go. And so we went in and talked to him and he was like saying, I have no other source of income. Mm. He said, I don't know anything about being a doctor, mm-hmm. but I have no other source of income. Wow. So I was kind of sharing with him about Matthew and how Matthew left being a tax collector, sure. what that was his career, but God took care of him and met his needs, and he gave us his number so we could
wow.
call us. And
just by any chance, has ever a witch doctor got saved?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. And there have been, I think, several times the witch doctors received Christ. And there have, what I was saying before, there have been many times where we lead somebody to Christ, and then after a couple months when we go back to the same area, they'll be like, remember me? Mm. This is my family. I went home and told my family about Christ, and they all received him. And that's awesome. And that's what, you know, that's so encouraging to
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we need to hear those things sure. because it gets so discouraging sometimes. Like, are we making a difference?
I'm sure the demonic is so prevalent there. I mean,
we have a lot of people come through. When I asked for prayer, they said, yeah, I need prayer because I'm a Christian and my family, my parents are witch doctors or something like that. And mm-hmm. they just persecute me, or, you know, they'll kick you out if you're a Christian, or there's a lot of, you see a lot of demon possession as well. Or,
yeah.
And a lot of times it's things like my daughter wakes up in the morning, just takes off, runs away. Those kind of things, it's manifested differently there.
Uh-huh.
But you see a lot of that going on.
I know sometimes we talk about demonic activity manifesting in mental illness or I could even see it in physical, you know, things sure, happening sure. where there's, you know, you can just even things in the Bible where people were demonic, you know, they had demon possession, but it manifested in some physical way or something in, or mental way. And so I know I deal with that at my work sometimes. And so do you guys, even when you're caring for people, I know you're caring for their physical needs, but I would imagine that there's times where you think there could be other stuff at play, right? Where, you know, someone may be dealing with headaches or something that's, mm-hmm. I'm not saying every headache's obviously from a demon, but maybe there's times where you're thinking, you know, this could have more to play in the spiritual realm as well.
For sure. There's some people that we treated them so long that there's something else going on right. because they should be healed.
Sure.
And there is a lot of mental illness there. And I think a lot of it has to do with that. There's one man that my husband said he went to the States to be a psychologist, but his family were into voodoo. And you hear these stories, you hear these things a lot from many people, but they, you know, had dealings with the witch doctor, and he came back and he has a mental illness. And he just paces the streets all day right. in a suit, still mm-hmm. wearing a suit, mm. carrying his briefcase.
Jeez.
Just pacing and talking to himself. And you see that a lot there. And you probably see that. I mean, I'm sure we have that a lot here, but they have facilities for that. In Haiti, they don't have facilities. So you mm-hmm. see all these They're people with everywhere. Mental illnesses sure. walking sure. the streets. And, sure. and yeah, you there's a lot of that.
Wow.
There, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Is drugs pretty heavy in Haiti? Is that something you guys have to deal
not
with?
Not too much, not especially too much. In our area. Sometimes there's people smoking marijuana, but you don't see a lot of that going on.
So it's just an American problem. No.
It's just expensive.
They True. Yeah,
they
I get that.
Can't afford
yeah.
it. So.
Okay, so here at Joplin Full Gospel, if someone says, hey, let's remember to pray for Esperanza and Barry and Elijah in Haiti. They're in Haiti and we need to pray for them. What are the things, and we're going to write these down. What are the things that you're like, this is what you need to pray about? Like specific things, like whether it's like things you're working on right now, things you guys are dealing with or battling. Because I think sometimes we just say, well, we just need to pray for them, but we don't really know what's going on at that mm-hmm. time. So what are stuff that
you wish the church would be in prayer for, maybe specifically for you guys or for your group or for whatever in that your area where you're at?
Definitely for wisdom, and then because we're leading Bible study and got based in the clinic, got a lot going on. So just wisdom and that, and also for encouragement. It's so easy to get discouraged, but encourage, just to be able to stay encouraged and stay strengthened to be able to continue doing ministry and provision. Of course, it's not easy, you know, with funds when you're a missionary.
What's the currency? That what type of currency?
They use goods.
Goods?
Goods. And
goods and services? No, Gouda, not Gouda, Chance.
Not Gouda.
Goods.
Goods. It's G-U-R-D-E-S is how you spell it.
Okay.
But it's pronounced goods. And it's, when I left, it was 123 goods to $1.
Wow. That's crazy.
So,
wow.
Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah, that's not good. Okay.
But it changes every day.
Right.
But lately, it's just been rising and rising. And then, yeah, encouragement, because it's so, there's a lot of depression in Haiti because of the things that are going on. We don't have a president. The gangs are taking over the Port-au-Prince area. There's shooting. There's so much danger where Barry's family lives. It's, you just never know what's going to happen. Sometimes they can't even, if they go somewhere, they can't get back to their house because of the shootings and the roadblocks, and they're just taking over more control. And there's just so much, you know, of course, poverty and sickness, so much sickness. If we did a clinic and we said anybody could come, we would have hundreds of people every day because there's just so much sickness.
What is it? Just, I mean, I'm assuming, is it like because of like malnourishment and the unclean water and things like that? Is that mainly the stuff that's making people sick, or like you mentioned, maybe someone like holds on to a sickness for a long time until it gets so bad they're eventually gonna go see somebody, or
I
just
know
lack
you
of
have the little girl that's the diabetic, right?
Yes.
And so is that something that you see a lot? You know, diabetes here is pretty, you know, pretty well known. I mean, do you see that kind of stuff over there?
Yeah, there's a lot of diabetes, but the main thing you see is like pain and because a lot of them have arthritis but don't know it, you know. Pain, acid reflux is a big one. High blood pressure. They'll have a lot of high blood pressure, and a man could come in and have like 320 over, you know, 210. I'm giving an example because I've seen that. And he just walks in and sits down, and that's what it is. And I'm like, how are you? How did you not have a stroke, you know? But because they can't afford blood pressure medicine. Sure. So those are the main ones. A lot of wounds, because you can start small and then just the
infection
dirt
and stuff,
a lot of infections. Yeah.
So do you think, like, as far as provision, do you guys lack a lot of medical supplies or just like expertise and care? Or because it sounds like groups like you are the ones mainly administering care. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of volunteer, or, you know, like you have some CNA background, but that was kind of luck, you know? So,
Project Hope does try to raise money for medicine to buy meds, and they send them to Haiti. And sometimes we buy them in Haiti. It's about 2.5 hour drive. Barry goes and buys meds in a place called Cap Haitien and brings them back. And yeah, the clinics are pretty much free. It's like 25 goods, not even a quarter, and we give it back to the church, just so they say, I paid for them going to take my medicine, you know. But then we have a Bible study that we would like to do more with. So yeah, we have, we'd like to raise more money for that. And of course, we're trying to build a home. We're staying at the Project Hope base right now. but we would like, we're in the middle of building our home, so provision, praying for provision would be great, because we got the walls halfway up. We're just waiting for God to provide the rest. and things like glucometer test strips, glucometer for people like Rose Caroline, who can't get those supplies. Sure. There, you know. So.
Gotcha. So when you say that you're staying at Project Hope's base, what does that all consist of? I'm like, it's like a compound or something.
It's like a compound called a base. It's a big building that's meant for the mission teams coming to stay in. So we got a big girls' dorm with about 16 beds, men's dorm with around the same, and then they have a couple apartments for when directors come to live there. Currently, we don't have any directors there. I'm the only North American on base right now. So we're just staying in one of the apartment.
Okay.
The little apartment.
And so I don't know much about Project Hope. Is it like independent, or is it based out of some church organization or churches?
Yeah, it's
or?
Independent.
It is kind of independent?
Yeah.
Okay. And so... And I'm guessing they're not just Haiti, but they're all over the place. Is that right?
Just Haiti, Nicaragua, and Springfield currently.
Springfield. Drastically different, but no.
They have a thing called International Fellowship, and they work with the students. They do Bible studies with foreign exchange students or at the college there, MSU. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, that's good stuff. Mom, you got anything else?
No, not really. Just, you know, that I'm sure for you, I mean, as the only American, do you feel a little, I know you get homesick, I know that. But, I mean, as being the only American and being by yourself, no family, how do you deal with your thing? I mean, do you just... I know you have to get the word and you have to pray, right? Because even when you're in service there, it's not like service, so to speak, right? Because it's also in Creole, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a little harder to
see. Do you guys have internet? I know this may be like a goofy question, but...
We have mission team that come down and installed solar panels.
Right.
And Wi-Fi, so that the teams won't die during the week there. They can use their phones.
Yeah, it's essential. Well, I was wondering, I mean, obviously I know you like communicate through Facebook and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you guys had some sort of way to have internet or anything like that. Cause I was wondering about that. Like if you guys used, you know, any sort of resources for studies and stuff like that, or if you, you know, watch JFG podcasts online or whatever, you know, like whatever it is. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wishing I'd still do it live, but whatever.
Yeah.
No, but about the being the only North American, I felt lonely for a while when the directors had left and gone back to the U.S. But I just prayed and asked God to send me some friends.
Sure.
Friends that kind of like understood, you know,
the
missionary life. And I started connecting with a lot of great people. I have three American friends that are married to Haitian men, and they have just been a huge blessing in my life, and it's very encouraging. And so, yeah, God sends what you need if you ask Him.
Absolutely.
Always.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
If someone, goofy question. If someone's saying, all right, Esperanza, I'm coming to Haiti to spend a month. Name three things I must bring. What are you going to tell them to bring?
A water bottle? Because you'll get so dehydrated.
Okay. Is there any water there to drink? Yeah. Or?
We buy bottled water.
Okay.
Like the big blue jugs. So we do have to buy filtered water. Don't drink out of the tap. Probably bring your Bible, of course, And bring some sunglasses because it's sunny. It's very sunny. Yeah, sunscreen if you look like Chance.
Okay, sunglasses or sunscreen, a Bible, or a water bottle.
Yeah. You know, the typical teams are in their chacos.
What's your average heat there? Because you don't have the seasons like we do.
We just have rainy season and dry season. And it's usually 80s, 90s. I think it's currently 90s during the day.
So what's cool for you guys?
I think one time it was in the higher 60s and they were freezing to death. I mean, it's hard for them when it gets down that cold. They're all in their coats and everything.
Sounds like heaven.
Barry likes cooler weather, but he's rare.
I hear 60s
most old. Most Haitians don't.
Okay. Well, I don't think I have anything else. Unless, do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. So you right now we're filming this, and it is June 20th, Monday, June 20th. Do I need to edit that out? Should I not be saying that? It's like, is there something going on? I don't know. And so you've been here. When did you get here last week? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't tell your family, but you came anyway.
But your grandma told you.
Yeah.
She's supposed to keep a secret.
She told me. She said, "Don't tell her family.
Don't tell anybody it's a secret."
But I was like, "Hey, while you're here, we need you." So how long are you here? Do you know?
Till July 6th. July 6th. I only have a couple weeks left.
Couple weeks. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure this will be out before July 6th, hopefully. But we will. Be excited, and it's exciting to know that we have these things that we can list for people that ask about what you're doing, because I mean, for the longest time, all we've heard is just SPs in Haiti. So it's good to know, like, you're not just like vacationing, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
A lot of people think that.
Nobody thought that.
Somebody would want to like help support. So does that go through Project
Hope? That's probably a good thing to know.
Or how do you do that? I mean, is that something they send to you directly, or does that need to funnel through Project Hope, or
it's both?
Or how? What do you think?
It's both. Some people support through Project Hope, and some just give it directly to me. Some give it to my dad so that it'll go through the church.
You are technically an employee of Project Hope, right?
Yeah, not by contract, but I am.
Okay.
Employee.
And they have website and all that where people can go and look and
pjhope.org, I think.
Sounds right.
Or com.
Yeah.
Org or com.
Yeah, we'll put it in the description below.
That you can check it out and know what they do.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Or you can check SP out on Facebook or contact Brother Packwood or however you want to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to support them.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. We'll go ahead and probably end right here. I think I've covered everything in my notes, and it wasn't too painful, I don't think. But thanks for coming on and giving up one of your valuable nights in the States.
Yeah.
At least we got the air conditioning on, and we did have to fight for that, but we do have it on.
Appreciate
and,
that.
And yeah, thank you so much. And
thank you guys.
Yeah.
I had fun.
I hope so. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you're still with us after an hour, and looks like I got an hour and 3 minutes.
Not too bad.
Yeah. A little shorter than a couple other, but we don't have some of our main talkers here tonight.
But thank you
so much for listening. And we look forward to next time. And like I said, it'll probably be from here on out, different discussions about different things going on in the church. We'll probably eventually get Esperanza's dad here and talk a little bit about his works and the things that he's been involved in over the years. And then I know I want to talk about all the different things we're a part of with the men's groups, the ladies groups, the worship team, all the above. We just keep making lists. But thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.